Chapter 11. The summons had been a single word, come. Despite its terseness, Major Jorge Espinoza read a great deal in the message, and none of it was good. It took nearly 12 hours to arrange transport from the northern border to his father's estate in the grassy pampas 100 miles west of Buenos Aires. He had flown the last leg himself in his Turbine Legend, a prop plane that looked like the legendary Spitfire, and had nearly the same performance. Lieutenant Jimenez, his burns heavily bandaged, had ridden in the rear seat. When his father was given command of the 9th Brigade, he had used family money to build them a new command center and barracks at the estate. The old runway a mile from the main house had been expanded and paved to accommodate a fully loaded C-130. The apron was also expanded for helicopter landing pads, and a huge metal hangar was erected. The camp itself was so far from the big house that even mortar practice didn't disturb the general, his new young wife, and their 2 children. It had housing for the 1,000 men who belonged to the elite unit, with support facilities for all their needs. Next to the parade ground was an obstacle course and a state-of-the-art fitness center. With its wide-open grassy plains, dense forests, and 2 separate river systems, the huge cattle estate was perfect for keeping the men in top operational preparedness. The nearby village of Salto was growing from a sleepy little farming community to a bustling town of people more than willing to take care of the soldiers' off-duty needs. Espinoza typically buzzed the main house when he made his approach to the airfield. His half-brothers loved his aircraft and begged him for rides incessantly. But not today. He wanted to attract as little attention to himself as possible as he soared over the estate, where the spring rains were turning the grassland green and lustrous. The debacle in the rainforest would be a career-ender for any other soldier, and it still might be for him. As both son and subordinate, he had let the general down. 9 men had died under his command, and when Raúl had finally stumbled into the border crossing, he had reported that the 4 men with him in the chopper were gone, and 6 more border guards were dead and their boats destroyed. They had also lost 2 expensive helicopters, with 1/3 damaged. But the worst of all for son and soldier was the fact that he had failed. That was the truly unpardonable sin. They had let the Americans steal back the satellite fragment from right under their noses. He recalled the bloody face of the American driving the pickup loaded with his wounded comrades. Despite the mask of gore, Espinoza knew every feature: the shape of the eyes, the strength of the jaw, the almost arrogant nose. He would recognize this man no matter where they met again, or how many years would elapse. He lined up the nimble plane on the runway and dropped the gear. A 4-engine C-130 was parked next to the big hangar. Its rear cargo ramp was down, and he could just make out a small forklift trundling up through the rear door. Espinoza wasn't aware of any future 9th Brigade deployments, and he was almost certain that after his meeting with the general, he would no longer be part of the elite force's future. The plane bumped once when it hit the asphalt and then settled lightly. It was such a delight to fly that every landing was a disappointment the trip was over. He taxied to the apron where his father kept his plane, a Learjet capable of getting him anywhere in South America in just a couple of hours. While the general came from a military family, Espinoza's late mother had been born into a clan whose wealth stretched back to the very founding of the country. There were office towers in BA and vineyards out west, 5 different cattle farms, an iron mine, and a virtual stranglehold on the country's cell phone system. All this was run by his uncles and cousins. Jorge had enjoyed the benefits of such wealth, the best schools and expensive toys like the turbine, but he'd never been attracted to its creation. He had wanted to serve in the military as soon as he understood that the uniform his father wore to work every day was a symbol of his nation's greatness. He had worked with single-minded determination to make his childhood dream of being a soldier a reality, and now at 37 years he was at what he considered the peak of his career. With the next promotion would come a desk job, something he looked upon with dread. He had operational control over Argentina's most lethal commandos, at least for another few minutes. The humiliation was like an ember burning in the pit of his stomach. A Mercedes ML500 SUV painted in a matte jungle camouflage was waiting for him and Jimenez. Inside was plush leather and burnished wood. It was his stepmother's idea of roughing it. "How is he?" Espinosa asked Jesus, his father's longtime majordomo, who had driven down to the runway to pick up the young master. "Calm," Jesus said, and tapped the vehicle into gear. Not a good sign. The track up to the manor house was a dirt road, but one so meticulously maintained that the ride was as smooth as the Autobahn, and the heavy SUV kicked up just a trace of dust. Overhead, a hawk spotted some prey on the ground, tucked its wings, and plummeted earthward. Maxine Espinosa greeted Jorge at the top of the steps leading to the front door. His stepmother was from Paris and had once been an employee of their embassy in the Cerrito section of Buenos Aires. His real mother had died 3 weeks after being violently tossed from a horse when Espinosa was 11. His father had waited until he was out of military college before considering remarrying, though there had been a string of beautiful women over the years. She was only a couple of years older than Jorge, and had the old man not met her first, he would have dated her in a heartbeat. He didn't begrudge his father a young wife. He had honored Jorge's mother by waiting so long, and by the time Maxine came into their lives, it was good to have a woman to blunt some of the general's rough edges, which had grown sharper over the years. She wore riding clothes that showed bearing two more sons for the general had done no permanent damage to her figure. "You are not hurt?" she asked, her Spanish laced with a French accent. He suspected the French women made their second language sexy no matter what it was. Maxine could make Urdu sound like poetry. "No, Maxi, I'm fine." Raoul approached, and she noticed his bandages. She blanched. "Mon Dieu, what did those pigs do to you?" "They blew up a helicopter I was in, Signora." Jimenez spoke to his shoes as if he wasn't comfortable around such wealth or the attention of his commander's wife. "The general is very upset," Maxine said, linking her arms through those of the young officers. The inside of the house was airy and cool, with a painting of Philippe Espinosa wearing the colonel uniform he had sported 2 decades earlier, dominating one wall. "He is like a stallion denied the mare. You will find him in the gun room." Jorge saw 3 men conversing in one corner of the entry hall. One turned when they entered. He was Asian, in his 50s. He was a man Espinosa didn't recognize. Lieutenant Jimenez made to follow his major, but Maxine would not relinquish his arm. "The general wishes to see him alone." The gun room was at the back of the house, its floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the yard, with its stream and waterfall. Hunting trophies hung from the walls. The head of a giant boar had the place of honor above the field stone fireplace. There were 3 separate glass-fronted gun cabinets and 1 locked safe where the general kept his automatic weapons. The floor was Mexican tile covered with Andean rugs. This was the room where punishment had been meted out when Jorge was growing up, and over the smell of leather furniture and gun oil he detected the scent of his own fear that had lingered over the decades. General Philippe Espinosa stood just under 6 feet, with a shaved head and shoulders as broad as a hangman's gallows. His nose had been broken when he was a cadet and never fixed, giving his face a masculine asymmetry that made it difficult to focus on his eyes. Being able to stare down others was just one of the tools he had used to thrive during the dictatorships of the 1970s and 80s. "General Espinosa," Jorge said, coming to attention. "Major Jorge Espinosa reporting as ordered." His father was standing behind his desk, leaning over as he studied a map. It looked like the Antarctic Peninsula, but Jorge couldn't be sure. "Do you have anything to add to the report I've read?" the general asked without looking up. His voice was clipped, abrupt. The Americans have yet to cross the border, at least not in their RHIB. Patrols have turned up no sign of it on either bank of the river. We suspect they sank it and extracted overland. Continue. The helicopter pilot they kidnapped says the team leader was named Juan, another called Miguel. The leader spoke Spanish with a BA accent. But you are certain they are American? I saw the man myself. He might speak Spanish like us, but he... Espinosa paused, trying to find the right words. Had that American look. The senior Espinosa finally looked up. I attended their special school of the Americas, same as Galtieri, only years later. The instructors at Fort Benning all had that look. Go on. There was one thing I left out of my report. We discovered the wreckage of an old blimp. The Americans found it first, and it looks as though they spent time examining it. A faraway look crossed the general's face. A blimp? Are you sure? Yes, sir. It was the pilot who recognized the type of aircraft. I recall when I was a young boy, a group of Americans flying across the jungle in a blimp. They were treasure hunters, I believe. They went missing back in the late 1940s. Your grandfather met them at a reception in Lima. They're found now. When the thieves stole our helicopter, they landed near the crash site as if they knew of it. I think they discovered it on their way to the logging camp. And you say they examined the wreckage? Judging by the footprints, yes, sir. Not something disciplined commandos would do. No, sir, not at all. Jorge took it as a good sign that his father sat. The calm exterior which masked his anger was slowly giving way to something else. Your performance in this matter is beyond reprehensible. I would almost say it borders on criminal negligence. Uh-oh. However, there are things you aren't privy to at the moment that mitigate the situation somewhat. Plans that are only known at the highest levels of the government. Soon your unit will be sent south, and it wouldn't do to have its most popular officer in custody. And what I put in the official report of the incident will depend on how well you perform in an upcoming mission. General, may I ask where we are to be deployed? Not yet. A week or so, and you will understand. Jorge straightened. Yes, sir. Now, go fetch your Captain Jimenez. I think I have something for you to do in the meantime.